Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Hi, this is Dr. Andy Barlow with the Chiropractic Physician Center of Tupelo and author of the number one best-selling book, The Code Breaker. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Then call my office at 662-844-1414 and order my new book, The Code Breaker.
Welcome in, everybody, on this Monday. Glad to be back with you. A couple of things for you today. First of all, the Auburn situation and how it pertains to Ole Miss. So we'll talk about that. If you want to hear my thoughts on just the Auburn situation, just from a looking at that, not with an Ole Miss twist perspective, I talked about that on YouTube. So just find my YouTube channel. Just search my name. By the way, I am Michael Borky. Just search my name there. You can find my thoughts, long form thoughts on that on YouTube. But today, because this is an Ole Miss podcast, we will look at it from an Ole Miss angle. Two names that have come up in the search that have Ole Miss ties. The obvious, of course. So we'll talk about that. And then I will also play for you Mike Bianco's preseason press conference. It is 36 minutes long. Somehow, some way, Mike Bianco talked for 36 minutes. And so if you want to hear it, I know some of you love it. I know some of you don't care. I'll put it at the end of the podcast. So the final 36 minutes are going to be Mike Bianco on the podium talking about, you know, his lineup and Tim Elko and returning a bunch of guys at the plate, the pitchers that are going to start, that kind of stuff. All the preseason, whatever, 36 minutes worth. You can hear that at the end of this. But I do want to talk about the Auburn situation. It is a dumpster fire, is what it is at Auburn. It is an absolute dumpster fire. That place has a serious absence of true leadership. There are a lot of people, too many cooks in the kitchen, as you probably figured out by now. We learned that during the last coaching search, where they got said no to by multiple candidates, and you had booster factions, and on and on and on. So we learned that when Brian Harsin got hired. He was like their fifth or sixth or seventh choice. And now it appears they are essentially seeking a reason to fire him with cause. And nothing that has come out, at least confirmed anyway, is actual cause. So maybe they'll find something somewhere down the line. They will find something, or maybe they have finally found something to fire him with cause. Either way, this is a disaster. If Tank Bigsby never runs out of bounds in the Iron Bowl and they win the Iron Bowl, we're not having this conversation today. If they go 8-4 instead of 6-7 or 9-4 instead of 6-7, nobody's having the conversation today. They are looking for cause to fire him for football reasons. That's what's going on here. It's pretty obvious that they are seeking instead of reacting to something that was exposed that they cannot ignore. If the football team was better, if recruiting went a little bit better, then we wouldn't be having this conversation today. It's a disaster. There's a void of leadership, too many cooks in the kitchen, whatever expression you want to use, that is Auburn right now. It is a disaster right now, regardless of the decision they make. If they decide to keep Harsin, then he can't coach. He will just be fired in November because you can't coach in this environment. The players are unhappy. It's a disaster. It is a disaster. But the inevitability has happened where if Auburn decides to move on from Brian Harsin, who will they hire? That's the question on everybody's mind. How does the Auburn search affect Ole Miss? Well, you are going to get the inevitable. Lane Kiffin, his name will come up, I think, on Feinbaum at the end of last week. I think it was Chris Lowe mentioned that Lane Kiffin could be interested in the job, and you're just going to get this all over again. I will say this. I don't know if Lane Kiffin would be interested or not. God knows. I have no idea whether or not Lane Kiffin would actually be interested in the Auburn job. I do know if he is interested in the job, he's an incredibly stupid person. And I don't think he is. I don't think Lane Kiffin is stupid. However, if there actually is interest from his side to join Auburn in its current state, he's an incredibly stupid person. And I don't mean to be so harsh, but that's the reality. Comparing the situations, even the rosters right now that he has at Ole Miss versus Auburn, the leadership situation, and oh, by the way, Auburn actively seeking to destroy him after one bad season, that is not a situation I would expect Lane Kiffin to want to enter into. Those are people that clearly want somebody that will, you know, kiss babies and shake hands and be part of the Auburn family. And right now, Lane Kiffin's current setup at Ole Miss, that is not required of him. It's very clear Keith Carter does not care at all if Lane Kiffin is, quote, part of the community, end quote. He doesn't care. All Keith Carter cares about, and rightfully so, mind you, is will you win me football games? And that answer is yes. So I don't give a crap what you do. I don't care if you're in LA right now. It doesn't matter because there's nothing you can be doing in Oxford right now. It's all up to Nick Savage to get your team ready for spring practice. Go see your kids and hang out with your kids for a while in LA. All good. All good. There's a reason Harsin's in Mexico. A lot of coaches take vacation this time of year, but point being, that's not a priority at Ole Miss. Maybe that will be his downfall. Maybe that is stopping some boosters from buying into Lane Kiffin, and that's their fault. That's not Kiffin's fault. But the leadership, his boss, and the university chancellor, I was going to say president, but he's a chancellor at Ole Miss, are cool with how he operates. There's no expectation of being a member of the community for Lane Kiffin. Not really. I mean, he did the, you know, the plugging the lights thing at the Christmas parade and stuff. And, you know, he's around, but not as much as he would be required to be at Auburn. They want somebody that would be part of the family. And you think he's buying into that? I don't. I could be wrong, but I don't. They are actively trying to destroy Brian Harsin right now. Right now, after one not so great season. He's got a better roster, better university leadership, both with the athletic director and the person running the university, and also, you know, a $7.5 million a year salary. If he were to be interested in the Auburn job, he would be an incredibly stupid person because his situation in Oxford right now is 10 times better than what he would currently inherit at Auburn. Is Auburn generally a better job than Ole Miss? I think that answer is yes. And I know some people would disagree with me, but I think that answer is yes. Right now? Hell no. Hell no. It's not even close to what he's got at Ole Miss. Not even close. Roster, quarterback, university leadership. So he would be stupid to be interested. But you're going to get his name show up because that's what happens. You're going to get his name to show up. It is going to happen. It's going to happen. Also, I saw Peter Burns draw the comparison, and I agree with him, that Tank Bigsby not going down to ice the game in the Iron Bowl, but instead running out of bounds, stopping the clock, giving Alabama time to go down the field and score, is setting off a butterfly effect similar to Elijah Moore. And he's right. If Tank Bigsby doesn't go down and Auburn wins, like I said earlier, we're not having this conversation today. Nobody. Is talking about Brian Harsin and spreading rumors and whatever the hell's going on over there if he beat Alabama this year. Nobody is doing that. Not one person. There's a stark difference, though, Peter, in the two situations. When Ole Miss decided to fire Matt Luke for football reasons, they didn't actively seek to destroy him to avoid paying a buyout. Ole Miss, as I understand it, is still paying Matt Luke. It's like 160 grand a month, something like that. He's getting all of his buyout. Ole Miss did nothing to stop themselves from having to do that because they were firing Matt Luke for football reasons, and they knew that. And so instead of trying to actively destroy his character, like maybe they could have tried. It wouldn't have gone over well because there would have been nothing to find, but they certainly could have tried, I suppose. Instead of trying, they just paid the buyout. And again, their effort would have been futile because there would have been nothing to find at all. Nothing. I'm not saying Brian Harsin's been perfect at Auburn. There's been some issues, a lot of issues, losing coaches, players hitting the portal, stuff like that. But when you've got current players saying that you need to talk to us first before you fire him because we love playing for Coach Harsin and you need to ask us what's going on here, one Auburn player described what Brian Harsin is doing as chemo, saying that Harsin's performing chemo on the cancers in the locker room. That's a current Auburn player who expressed in the same thread of tweets that he is displeased with his playing time and still went to bat for Brian Harsin, saying he's just performing chemo on our cancerous locker room. So Yeah, there are some questions, but apparently it's not as black and white as people want to make it out to be. So Auburn is actively seeking to destroy this guy. Ole Miss didn't do that to Matt Luke. So there's a difference between the two right there, for whatever that's worth. Either way, the second name, of course, that's coming up, obviously coming up, is Hugh Freeze. So Lane Kiffin's name is going to get out there because he gets clicks. And maybe he would be interested in the job. But again, if he's interested in the job, he's a stupid person. Hugh Freeze would not be a stupid person to be interested in the Auburn job. In fact, Hugh Freeze is the kind of coach that I think Auburn's going to have to hire in this cycle. I think Auburn has to go damaged goods here. They have created a mess. And their candidate pool, I think, is different than it would be had they just let Harsin coach the year out and fire him after 2 years instead of just after one. I think it changes their candidate pool. If I'm like just throwing a random name out there, if I'm like Dave Clawson, who just got a nice little raise at Wake Forest, he's not getting SEC money, but he's got he's making a few million bucks a year, got a good stable job. And Auburn calls, I don't even bother talking to him, honestly. I wouldn't bother because this is two coaching search cycles now that have shown you that nobody knows who the hell's in charge. And again, they're sabotaging Harsin after 1 year. I'm good here in Winston-Salem. I'm good in Birmingham. If I'm Bill Clark, I wouldn't take the job. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a Mike Gundy, like I heard earlier, would jump at Auburn and just dive right into the dumpster fire. Maybe he would. But Hugh Freeze makes sense to me because I think Auburn has to go damaged goods. They have to go Hugh Freeze. They have to go Matt Rhule, which I think would be a great hire for them, by the way. If I'm a fan of another program in the SEC, I would least want them to hire Matt Rhule. I think he'd come in and do a good job. He's navigated disaster before at the college level, did an excellent job. Not cut out for the NFL. Just not cut out for the NFL. That would be a hire that would concern me. But I think that's the route Auburn needs to go, is damaged goods. The problem with Hugh Freeze, there's multiple problems with it. First of all, if one of the rumors is true, then you can't hire Hugh Freeze. You can't do it. You cannot hire Hugh Freeze if one of the particular rumors is true, and that's why you fire Harsin. You can't do it. And also, in the last coaching carousel, they looked into Hugh Freeze, decided against it. Why is that? Why have other SEC schools? Because despite what some people think, the league office is not blackballing him anymore. There's multiple SEC schools have looked into it and decided, nah, we're good. Why is that? I don't know. I'm asking a genuine question. Why is that? And why did Auburn do that last time? Why did Auburn look into it and think, no, we're good. So what has changed in a year? Maybe desperation. I don't know. I don't know. That's a job that Freeze would take right away, obviously. I would be curious to see if he can handle it because there's no pressure, none at Liberty. None, zero. There was very little pressure at Ole Miss, and it wasn't able to be handled. Place like Auburn, with this mess, with Nick Saban in your state, a lot of pressure. And if they hire him, I mean, he's a good coach, all that. I'm not denying that, but I don't know. I don't know if it would work out as well as some people around here will try to convince people like me that it would. It wouldn't scare me if I were you, to tell you the truth. I saw somebody say last night that Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze should scare Ole Miss fans. And I laugh at that notion. What the hell are you talking about? It's like the year 2016 never happened. Either way, that name is out there. And we'll see if that's the route that Auburn has to go. If they fire Brian Harsin, he would take the job. We'll see if he can handle the job. My guess is no, but That's just a guess. I do not foresee a scenario in which Lane Kiffin would be interested. But if he is, he's a moron. And I don't think he's a moron. So there you go. Here's an Ole Miss angle to the Auburn situation. Again, if you want to hear more, I talked about it a lot on YouTube last night. Just, again, find my YouTube channel. Just search Michael Borky, and you can find it there. Don't forget to follow also on Twitter and Facebook. Just, again, search my name, Michael, B-O-R-K-E-Y, on Twitter and Facebook. And wherever you get your podcasts, this is available wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe while you're here. I know some of you listen in browser. Subscribe, and it'll auto-update to your phone every time a new episode is loaded. Before we get to Mike Bianco, I want to remind you the podcast is brought to you by Advantage Business Systems. ABSMS.com is the website. If you're in the market for office technology anywhere inside of the state of Mississippi, they can service you. They started in Jackson, but again, they service the entire state. Advantage Business Systems. So if you are in the market for any office technology, if it's technology, if it's in the office, and you're in the market for it, ABSMS.com is the website. Tell them I sent you. Get a complimentary office technology assessment. Podcast is also brought to you by LB's, just across from Kroger on University Avenue. Baseball season is coming, so you're going to see a ton of LB's at Swayze this year. I told you last week that they struck an NIL deal with a handful of Ole Miss baseball players. Really cool stuff. Kind of figured that was coming with how into Ole Miss baseball LB's is. But stop by and see him. Go by and see Greg and tell him I sent you. It's the best place in the state to get your meat. You've got beautiful weather coming this week. So, you know, if you're getting off early or maybe have the day off, I mean, you've got mid-60s this week. Perfect grilling weather. So get your meat at LB's just across from Kroger on University right there in Oxford. All right, here's Mike Bianco now. 36 minutes of him previewing the 2022 season. So here's Mike Bianco, and he will end the podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Thanks, Mitch. I appreciate it, and welcome everybody for being here today, and making it through the weather. You know, I think even last night talking to Mitch, we weren't sure if we could put this back on, but thankfully, you know, here in Oxford, we missed a lot of the, as you know, frozen precipitation, and able to get you guys here and even get an inter-squad game in this afternoon. Excited to have Mitch here, I keep saying sports information director. I apologize. I think the correct term now is communications director. But we welcome him here, and excited that he's part of the program, you know, with us. Start off by saying that super excited to announce, you know, once again, we broke another season ticket record. So kudos to the marketing team here, you know, the communications team, and of course our ticket office, over 8,000. And, you know, season tickets, just incredible, and you know, great fan base that, you know, continues to buy tickets, show up to the games, and support like no other program, and makes it, you know, the greatest atmosphere, you know, in college baseball. And might get asked a little bit later, because of the 8,000 season tickets, because of the support, you know, there's a vision by Keith and his staff to continue the expansion of the stadium and some different things, and that's really because of the growth of the fan base, and that we continue to sell tickets. And when you sell tickets, and you actually sell more tickets than you actually have seats, doesn't take a genius of a businessman to realize that you got to build some more seats. And so they're in the process of doing that. It's still in its infancy, but I'm excited that it's important to them, that you work at a place that your sport is important. And, you know, Keith has always shown that. And so we're excited about, you know, the future, you know, of our facility. With that, talking about the team, so I've said this a few times, and I think it might come across wrong, but it was somewhat of an uneventful fall for us, in a sense that it was kind of business as usual. And that can happen, I think, when you have so many older guys return, so many veterans. And so when I say uneventful fall, it kind of went as planned. And I think sometimes as a coach, you know, that's a good thing. You know, that there wasn't many issues. You know, surely, you know, we want those good surprises, but sometimes guys with good surprises, there's things that go wrong. No really injuries to speak of coming out of the fall, you know, other than, you know, normal bumps and bruises, but an uneventful fall where the offense, you know, that was the number one offense in the Southeastern Conference last year, just continued to swing well as we return, you know, basically the entire offense from last year, even with, you know, Tim being sidelined with the ACL rehab, the offense just didn't, you know, miss a step and, you know, continue to swing well, which in turn made it tough, you know, on a pitching staff that was, I think, trying to, you know, make a name for themselves. And so as well as we swung it, we probably swung it better than I would imagine that we would swing it. So I look back this morning just trying to put it in perspective. We played 268 innings in the fall. So when you look at perspective, if you divide it by nine, that's almost, it's almost 30 games, 29.7, you know, games to be exact. So if you played 30 games, you know, we hit 51 home runs. And so that's a lot of homers. We stole 77 bases. So a lot of offense. And, you know, that's nice. The problem is that you're on the other side of the ball as well. And so from a pitching standpoint, we probably didn't pitch it as well as I would like or hope. But with that being said, some guys really stood out. Of course, Derek Diamond led the pitching staff with the least amount of runs given up. But the guy with the lowest ERA was a grad transfer, and John Gaddis from the University of Texas, Corpus Christi. He had a terrific fall. Normal names that our fans will know, guys like Brandon Johnson and Jack Doherty pitched well. But some newcomers, Jack Washburn, a transfer from Oregon State, pitched really well. Hunter Elliott, true freshman from Tupelo High School, pitched really well. Drew McDaniel pitched great, probably the second half of the fall. And so with all that offense, you know, we felt good finishing the fall that we may have more depth on this staff, or we do have more depth on this staff, even missing Nikhazy, Broadway, and Hoagland over. As a staff, you know, we probably have more depth and more talent than we did a year ago. And with those guys, you know, those guys are a year older. And we did pitch it well. When you talk about the two scrimmages playing University of Alabama and University of Arkansas, Little Rock, I look back at those scrimmages and where against outside competition, not facing our hitters in the other dugout, you know, we pitched it really well. One of the things I think doesn't get mentioned, you know, in these types of settings, press conference, it just seems to be the least sexy thing is defense. But one of the things that I think as a goal of ours going in, we wanted to play better defense, you know, this year. And not that we were poor last year, but we were average. And, you know, to be an elite team, and especially to help a pitching staff out, you know, we wanted to be able to catch it and throw it a little bit better. And I think we did that this fall and improved, you know, defensively, you know, as a whole. And the old adage, you know, a lot of times when you look at your defense, how are you built up the middle? You know, where are you in those positions that are, you know, the premier defensive positions? Catcher, in the middle, infield, second base, shortstop, and of course in center field. And when you look at, you know, Hayden Dunhurst behind the plate, and then up the middle, Peyton Chatagnier and Jacob Gonzalez in the middle infield, and then T.J. McCants or Justin Bench in center field, we're as strong as we've ever been here in this program in my 22 years up the middle. And so I think we'll really defend it well. And then one of the things I briefly mentioned, but I thought we did a great job, and another goal is to be more productive on the base paths, to not just stolen bases. Obviously, that's the easy, I think, metric or stat to look back at. But beyond that, to take the extra base, to be able to read balls in the dirt, to be able to move up, you know, bases. Last year, I don't think we were as good as we could be. Some reasons for that. You know, I think a reason that, you know, we kind of put the parking brake on Peyton Chatagnier, who should be one of our best base dealers, but after the first month of the season and he tore his hamstring, we just played it really careful for him the the rest of the year and didn't allow him to run. But another year of experience for Justin Bench and TJ McCants, who are probably our best base stealing threats. And they continued this fall. You know, all three of those guys running really well this fall, stealing bases. And as I mentioned, in approximately 30 games, we stole 77 bases against maybe the best catching trio that we've ever had here. And so it's not like they took advantage of catchers that couldn't throw, guys that kind of improved, you know, our game as a whole. On the injury front, you know, Tim Elko's, you know, been back, been released to be able to go, you know, full speed, looks 100% out there. I was even a little shocked a few weeks ago. I told Tim, pulled him to the side, watched him do it during an early work portion of our practice where it's just defense, and watched him move around at first base. And, you know, easy to look at him and not realize, you know, the injury that he had last year, and of course surgery, and how much work and effort that he put in, and Josh Porter, our trainer, has put in to get him back out on the field. But man, he looks amazing out there. And of course, in the first weekend, as Tim can do, 4 for 9 with 2 home runs in the first weekend. So pretty good start for him. And of course, Max Chofi is still, you know, on a rehab front, and should be, you know, able to pitch this year. Likely not until, you know, mid to late March. I don't know it off the top of my head. I meant to bring it in here, you know, the actual date, but of course the last month of rehab is critical to his bullpens and see where he is. But certainly he's hit all his marks, you know, through the throwing protocol, and is ready to pitch, you know, this year. I'll go around the diamond just to give you know, the names. It's probably the easy part is to start with the position players. And I don't know, a year when I've gotten ready for the press conference and tried to write down names, there's always, you know, some question marks. This year, not as many question marks. You know, some guys have played really well, and the guys that we will assume will start on February 18th are Kevin Graham in left field, TJ McCants or Justin Bench in center field. In right field is one of those kind of, you know, by committee or open up, very open at this point. And Hayden Leatherwood and Kemp Alderman. Kemp had a tremendous fall, really proud of him. A kid that, as you know, was going to redshirt last year. We pulled him off the bench, had a couple really big at bats, and, you know, big home run against LSU here on a Sunday that, you know, won the game for us. But a guy that's really worked with Mike Clement, our hitting coach, and has improved tremendously. Think that he's going to be a big part of the offense this year. So Leatherwood and Alderman and Wright. At third base, Bench, our only first-team All-SEC candidate, you know, in the infield. Justin had a terrific year for us this year, and I think could play center, could play third, could play anywhere in the infield, to be honest with you. But I think we'll start off the first weekend. You'll probably see him with a start in center and a start at third for sure. Reagan Burford, junior college transfer that was here in the fall last year, transferred to Northwest Florida, and then back, here, gives us some depth in the infield and had a really good fall offensively and has a chance to start at third base. Shortstop, national freshman of the year, Jacob Gonzalez, returns, and, you know, excited, you know, to watch, you know, him just continue to get better every single day. And Peyton Chatagnier at second base, as I mentioned also, and then Tim Elko at first base. Behind the plate, Hayden Dunhurst, and so not a lot of surprises from the DH spot. You know, Ben Van Cleve, you know, had a really good fall for us. Calvin Harris, who's also a catcher, as you know, coming off arm surgery last year, I think is another candidate for the DH spot, and some of the other guys that don't find their position, you know, as one of the starters in the field, obviously could be one of the DHs. From the pitching side, on February 18th, we'll start Derek Diamond on that Friday afternoon against Charleston Southern. After that, we're not sure. Right now it's still a lot of competition going on for those last two spots on Saturday and Sunday starters, and certainly could be fluid through the first 4 weeks. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, more depth, I think more options, more high-end ability than we had last year. Guys like Jack Doherty and Drew McDaniel and Brandon Johnson have all pitched really, really well, and I think are candidates to be, you know, weekend starters for us. And then the transfers that I've mentioned already, two of them, Jack Washburn and John Gaddis, and Dylan DeLucia, another junior college transfer, another one from Northwest Florida that's pitched really well, pitched great last weekend, pitched really well at the end of the fall, along with a couple freshmen that pitched really well this fall. Mentioned Hunter Elliott and from Tupelo High School, and Riley Maddox from Jackson Prep. And then, as I said, you know, Chofi's rehab is going really well, and I see him being a part of that bullpen, you know, as the season progresses. So, with that, I'll open it up to your questions.
You touched on them a couple times, but what have you liked specifically out of Gaddis and Washburn since they've come in and try to fit into the system?
Well, obviously they're different. You know, one's a big power right-hander, one's a left-hander, but a little undersized. But Gaddis, you know, probably from a fan standpoint, looks a little more like Doug Nikhazy in a sense that body size, attacks hitters. He's got a really good fastball that plays up. He's not going to light up the radar gun. He's going to throw the ball in the upper 80s, low 90s. But the fastball's got some swing and miss to it. Good breaking ball, really good changeup. Great competitor, a guy that was Southland Conference Pitcher of the Year last year, and so he's used to winning, used to having success, and you know, to add an older guy like that to your staff, obviously, you know, that's a plus for us. And you know, it's not a secret, we don't have a lot of left-handed arms, so you know, pitching from that side obviously is big for us as well. You know, Jack, you know, Washburn is a kid that you know played at a you know one of the best programs in the country, in Oregon State, and you know, also played on the USA national team this summer, and so a guy that's used to playing in, you know, major college baseball, playing on a big stage, big power right-hander, really good fastball, really good breaking ball. Pitched mostly out of the bullpen for Oregon State last year, and I think, you know, has certainly got an opportunity to be a weekend starter for us.
You talked about both of those guys, and they both had good years last year, but coming, you know, to the SEC, how well, do you think they can adjust to playing in a conference that has so much offense returning this year and the best conference in the country? And two, how much do you think you're going to kind of rely on those two guys this year?
Well, I think we're going to rely on them tremendously. The back part of your question. Nobody really knows the first part of your question. You know, I think, you know, some of that's, you know, physical and some of that's mental, and some of that's just a hurdle that everybody has to get through. But these are confident guys. These are guys, as you mentioned, had, you know, success, you know, in college and in high school. And they're older guys, you know, these, you know, and I think that's one of the things, with, you know, for, especially from a baseball standpoint, not to turn this into a transfer portal press conference, but you know, when you look to that, sometimes I think in baseball, you know, that's the help is that they're older. The help is that they've done some of this. So as I mentioned earlier about Jack, you know, pitching in the Pac-12 and pitching in, you know, with Team USA, and John being the conference pitcher of the year. These are guys that you know have had success, and even though it hasn't been in the SEC. Really, nobody's had that unless you pitched in the SEC. So you can't usually use that, I think, as a negative. It's just something that they haven't done yet, but we think they're going to be big parts of what we're trying to do this year.
So a little separation between the potential starters on the mound. How do you sort of balance giving those guys opportunities and sample sizes versus, you know, making sure you give kind of everybody a shot?
Yeah. And I think it's a delicate balance. I think last year I did a poor job of not the starters necessarily, but with the bullpen and trying to find the right guys. And we had so many guys at one time. I looked up and it was early in the season, and you know, we had like 19 guys or 20 guys that had stats. And when I used the term phrase that they had stats, meaning they pitched. And so, you know, when you're playing four times a week and you're pitching 19 19 guys, there's a lot of one innings, and that's not a great, not necessarily a sample size, and hard to judge one way or the other, but it's also, I don't think, benefits them, you know, to where they get opportunities to pitch out of jams, to show what they can do, can they extend and pitch more than an inning, and what, you know, where their role is going to be. So I say that first, where it's not the easiest thing. But with that being said, I think all of these guys that I've mentioned can pitch or have pitched out of the bullpen. They certainly can do that. We'll make the best choice that we can. We talked about it, Coach Lafferty and I, this morning, that at some point you make a decision and you go with the three, but just because they're starting against Charleston Southern doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to pitch the next week against VCU or Central Florida or they're going forward. We've had years where, on opening weekend, those three guys went the entire season, and it doesn't necessarily mean your team struggles that way, but there's times where guys pitch better than others, there's times where injuries or what have you change that rotation, and so I think sometimes a fall and an early spring like this, when there's so much competition, is a good thing. I think it's a healthy thing, and so just because they don't start, because let's face it, there's only three guys that are starting opening weekend, just because they don't start doesn't mean that they won't start at some point. And so how do you, as you used the phrase, and I used it because you used it, the sample size, we've seen it. I've seen it years from, 15, 17 years ago. Will Klein had started in a bullpen, became a starter. Scott Biddle was, the greatest closer we ever had, and we made him a starter, and he just rolled through it. TJ Beam, just because you start in the pen or just because you have had success in the pen, a lot of times if you can get him out, you can get him out. And it doesn't matter if it's the first inning or the ninth inning. So,
with Derek's growth, have you seen him add or anything new or different, or is he just kind of becoming a more consistent version of the guy he's been the last 2 years?
One of the things I credit Derek is I think he just wants to always improve. He's always looking to get better, and unlike some guys in that age, right, at 19 to 22 years old, it's not just about velocity. I think he realizes that he's got the ability to run the ball up there in the upper 90s, but he wants to pitch, and to pitch and to be effective. He realizes that he's got to locate his fastball. That can be super overpowering at times, but to locate it better, to be able to mix two breaking balls in there, change up, work on his defending the steal and his pickoff move, to his body and nutrition and so on. And so I think he's really mature. One of the things that I will say about Derek and Drew and some of those others that I think fall into this category, so it's kind of a segue going off your question, is these are guys that they're in their junior year, they're in their third year, but last year was really their freshman year. Derek, even though he pitched and he was the Sunday starter in 2020, he never pitched an SEC game. He played four games against non-conference teams and pitched well and did what you would hope that he would do as a freshman, but he didn't get the benefit that a guy like Gunnar Hoglund did, where you can kind of get your nose bloodied a little bit in the SEC, and do you survive, and does that experience and that getting beaten up every once in a while, does that make you better? Well, I think the great ones, it does make better. Some guys aren't strong enough to get through that, and so when you look at Derek, when you look at Drew, their positives are awesome from last year, but some of the things that they struggled with or games that they had difficulty with, that's to happen. There's not many freshmen that run out there, and even though they were considered sophomores, there's not too many guys that run out there the first time. We realized that. We had a ladies' forum here last week, and one of the group was an older group. It's Tim Elko, but it was with Chatagnier and a handful of guys that they're household names. They've been in the program. This is the third year, and they asked them what was their favorite venue, to go to in the SEC. Well, everybody but Elko had only been to the five schools. Because now, even though they've been here 3 years, they didn't get that 2020 year. They didn't get to go to it. So they've only been to, five schools out of the 14. So, it was kind of a difficult question. And I think that just kind of, shows you that, it's there's a maturation period.
With all these, pitching pieces that you talked about, some new faces, some maybe with a little bit less experience, but how important is having a guy like Dunhurst back there just in terms of getting everybody acclimated?
Yeah, it's hard to quantify, but there's no doubt it's a big deal. You know, arguably the best catcher we've ever had, you know, behind the plate, and that's saying a lot. We've had some really, really good guys back there, but the way that he handles pitchers, the way that he defends the running game, the way that he receives and keeps balls into the strike zone and makes pitches that are close look so good, he's terrific. You know, he's a guy that's going to catch in the big leagues, and I'll let Derek and the other guys, you know, speak on what, you know, trying to read their mind. But, you know, if I was a pitcher, I'd like to pitch to him.
Is Calvin, with his development, receiving, catching, just everything?
It's done well, you know, and both him and Knox, you know, had really good falls, and, you know, I'm proud of it. You know, the falls that they both had continue to improve, and Cal's, you know, throwing, I mean, he looks like he did, you know, before he hurt his arm, and which I think is the biggest thing. And, you know, like I said, you know, Hayden will get, you know, most of the pub, which he should and deserves, but we got two pretty good guys, you know, behind him.
Is TJ, in your mind, a full-time outfielder now, or is he working at third?
He continues to work in the infield. I think not that he couldn't play third, but I think you know, he's probably more suited for the middle, you know, at second base or shortstop. It's one of those things that happens in college baseball where ends up, you know, probably his best friend and Jacob Gonzalez. You show up, and you know his career, you know, in the infield may be different if Jacob wasn't here and signed out of high school. But he's a super athlete. I think the scouts, you know, realize that he's a draft eligible sophomore, and you know he's a kid that, you know, has played infield in the scrimmages, and we'll continue to do that. I think one, it gives us, you know, more depth and more options. Two, in fairness to him, who knows that may be the thing that he does when he gets to, you know, professional. Professional baseball.
Mike, you guys were one game away from Omaha last year. You have this whole offense basically coming back. You took advantage of the transfer portal, and you have some good young arms that showed some bright spots last year. Do you think it's realistic for Ole Miss baseball fans to have an Omaha expectation for this year's team?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a coach, and obviously I'm a little partial, you know, to that, but you know, I would think that you would always have that expectation. You know, and it's not a secret. We haven't been since 2014, but we've been really close. And you know, it's one game, and you got to play a little bit better. You know, you got to pitch it a little bit better. You got to swing it a little bit better. But I see no reason, you know, why this team, you know, doesn't have an opportunity to get to Omaha and be the first team in a few years to get there. I think we have all the pieces. You know, obviously the offense. Offense is there, but on the mound, I think we will surprise some people, and I think we will pitch, you know, better than, you know, most people, you know, probably expect us to. And I say that just because it's easy, I think, sometimes when you sit back and you look at the names and Elko and Graham and Bench and McCants and Gonzalez and all the names that have had success. But I also think back to 2 years ago in 2020, the pandemic year, where, you know, we got off to a great start, but we had lost Dillard and Zabowski and Kessinger and, you know, this great offense from the year before, and nobody really knew where the offense was going to come from. People forgot. That's the nature of sports. It's the nature, especially, of college athletics. You know, if you're going to consistently win, which we hope we're one of those programs that consistently wins, that there's going to be times where you may not know the names and the faces quite yet, or maybe you know them, but they haven't quite had that success. But there's a reason for it, because Nikhazy pitched the big innings last year, and it was his turn to do that. It was, you know, Gunner's turn to do that, and Broadway's turn to do that. Well, you know, now it's somebody else's turn.
You mentioned defense. How much of that is just individual emphasis on getting better in lineup construction versus, you know, what you're putting out there from an improvement defensively?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, that's a tough question, but I think it's both. But, you know, to watch, you know, and some of it's just maturing. You know, some of it, you know, one of the things I've said a lot is, you know, so much has been made of Jacob's year last year, but really probably from an offensive standpoint, to hit in the mid 300s and, you know, hit all those home runs and RBIs and basically bat 2-3, you know, the entire year on a really good offensive team. But not many people mention his defense, and, you know, he played every game at shortstop, you know, the most difficult position, and a lot of pressure at that position, and he did it well. He did it as well as, you know, any freshman we've ever had. I know he wants to do better, and the expectation is he'll play better. But when I look back at the great ones, there's not too many freshmen that went out and played every single day and played like he did defensively. But I know that's one of his goals individually. And I think collectively as a coach, you know, we're also looking at big picture, right? We're looking at, you know, can we shut down runs? Can we do some things, not just team defense and double cuts and that, those types of things, but collectively as a defense, can we play better and play an elite defense? Can we play in that 978, close to 980 range to where you just don't give up runs? You're going to catch all the balls out there, and you're going to defend the steal. And, you know, when you have a guy behind the plate like Dunhurst, and you got the infielders that we return, we should.
What you've seen from Burford, is that, what did you sort of see a year ago when he was here from the ball? Was there a lot of maturation since then? Or is it the same way?
Yeah, I just watched a very mature approach offensively. You know, he's a guy that's a little different, I think, from what our fans, you know, he's not, you know, Elko or Graham, and he's not hitting balls out into the student section, but just a great approach where he's going to be a tough out. He can run, he can handle the bat, and so we're going to need that. You know, because, you know, we do have some guys in the middle that can swing, you know, and one of the goals also that I didn't mention is to cut down the, you know, some of the swing and miss, you know, that we had last year. I'm not a, you know, a big strikeout guy in the sense that, you know, we know that sometimes when you put big guys in the lineup that hit home runs, you're going to have a little more swing and miss. That's kind of the trade-off. And but, you know, you got to be careful not to have too much. And I think last year we bordered on that too much, where, you know, we'd like to cut that down. I know that's been one of the focuses for Coach Clement. They certainly did that this fall. And, you know, guys like Burford in the lineup, I think, you know, helped that cause.
Going off in multiple sports, there's a lot of bouncing around with the assistant coaches and all, and seen that in
local sports,
gratifying to have your staff
remember that. Yeah, terrific. You know, Carl Lafferty's the most tenured coach, assistant coach in the Southeastern Conference, been with us since 2006 in some role, right? Of course, Mike Clement's been here since 2015. Yeah, when you talk about, you know, the two main guys, not to mention Chris Cleary's been here for, you know, a handful of years, and the operations guys, from a head coach's standpoint, man, it's much smoother, much easier. But if it's easier for me and smoother for me, you can only imagine what it is for the players. Right, it's not learning a whole new system. It's not learning a whole new offensive system or philosophy, or even coaches' techniques. Right, everybody's different. Everybody's got different personalities, and I'm fortunate. You know, I've had some great coaches here, as you know, that have gone on to be great coaches, head coaches at other programs. But I don't know if I've ever collectively, and I mean that. I know coaches say that, but man, I'm really blessed. These guys are terrific, and to have, you know, Clem and Laff here, you know, make us a lot better and make my job a lot easier.
Playing off that a little bit, does that make it easier to accept the Team USA thing? Because we got the portal and the summer going on, but you can trust.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I was scared to death as an assistant in 2013, just because I don't know if you realize it, I'm kind of hands-on as a head coach. And so to be able to, you know, to be out of the country, to be gone, and it's not that long. You know, this year's tour will be less than 3 weeks. And so heck, that's just a fishing trip for Kiffin, right? So, no, I'm teasing. I shouldn't have said that. But for us, it's a tough thing, and it's right in the middle of recruiting. But to have guys like that, you're exactly right. We've done it one time, and they handle it terrific. You know, matter of fact, I think, you know, that was probably the summer. Maybe it helped because I think that led into that 2016 class was, you know, the number one ranked recruiting class in the country. So maybe Laff and Clem could, you know, pull one of those out again. That would be good.
What have you seen kind of click for Kemp since the fall? You said he had that hot fall.
The biggest thing is to be able to work on his approach. I think, you know, some of it we talk about is just maturation and confidence, and some of it's just, I think, approach and worked with Coach, you know, Clement, where you just, there's just a lot less swing and miss, a lot more, you know, swinging at balls in the zone, last year. Just he would get himself in bad counts, and again, some of that, like I said, is just being a young guy and wanting to do well, and at times emotionally maybe not handling it the best. But this year he looks like a different player. I'm excited for him. That's not to just put it all on him. I mean, it's only his second year, and he didn't have a ton at bats last year. But just proud of I wanted to mention him because just proud of the way that he worked this fall and in the fall that he had to put himself in position to help us and be a big piece for this lineup.
How special can Jacob be? And I mean, is it even possible for him to surpass the numbers that kind of he put up last year at such a young age?
Somebody asked me that, and that's the unfair thing of sports, right? Once you do well, the expectation is, what's next? Or, do you hit 400 now? Do you hit, 20 home runs? And I think Jacob's smart enough that you can't just look at it that way, right? You just got to go out and play and look at certain areas of your game. If it's defensively, if it's, to cut down strikeouts, if it's to hit the ball, whatever that is for you to try to, improve that way. The stats are the stats, now he may answer differently. Maybe there is a goal to hit 375, but I think probably the best road to success is to put it in perspective and just say that I want to prove these parts of my game, versus some expectation from a reporter from Columbus to say that I'm supposed to hit a certain amount to say that I did improve. I think if he could put up the same numbers he did last year, I think we'd be real happy.
Coach, you got all this experience coming back, especially guys like Tinoco. How much does that make it easier on you to, motivate these guys for that run to Omaha?
I don't look at it that way. I think my job's always to look at ways to motivate them, to encourage them to look and see things that they may not look at. But at the end of the day, I think, my job is to get them to play the best that they can play. And sometimes that's motivation. Sometimes that's kicking them in the rear. Sometimes that's showing them, what they can do or what we're doing now and what we shouldn't do. So it's a lot of different things, but I don't necessarily think it's just giving a motivational talk in the outfield or showing a motivational video. But I do think almost in reverse is, not that they would get complacent, that sometimes you take for granted. And we don't want that. That was kind of a challenge to some of the leaders yesterday, that you don't want to just take for granted that we're going to have a good year. You don't want to take for granted that we're going to have a good offense. You don't want to take for granted. You want to do the things that help you have that offense, to have that team, have that leadership. To me, the focus is to make sure that you're doing the things that you need to do every single day so you can have the days that you want to have, right? That's what we're trying to do in the next couple weeks is, to not look at February 18th, but to look at each day and how can we improve each day to be the best baseball team that we can be.
Mike, given the injuries and everything that you had that went on last year, was last year one of your better coaching jobs individually?
Absolutely. I joke, Parrish, that's for you guys to judge. I don't look at it that way. I will say that it's the most proud that I've ever been, of a team. And because of that, because there were so many times where when you have those adversities, we're human, right? And it doesn't matter if you're a reporter or you're a fan or you're a coach or a player, you feel those and you go, wow, how are they going to recover from this? How are they going to be able to bounce back from this? And we're not just talking one. We're not just talking about losing a quarterback, which is huge, right? That's like losing your Friday night starter, but, you're talking about losing your best hitter, for a month and not sure if he's ever coming back. And, the first month we lose our second baseman and our closer and Max Chofi. And it just seemed that we lost Doug Nikhazy for 2 weeks, the start conference play. It just seemed, like every 3 or 4 weeks, we got kicked in the gut. And to their credit, they just continued to bounce back, to show that grit, to show that resilience, and to have the year that they had, to win 18 conference games, to win 45 regular season games, and to put yourself in that position to be one game from Omaha. What a disappointing finish, but I don't know if I've ever been more proud you know, of any team in the 22 years than that team, because they went through a lot and almost, you know, made it to Omaha.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.